You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Terrence Houston, and this is The Ecologist Goes to Washington, a podcast program by the Ecological Society of America, where we interview scientists involved with public policy. Today, I'm interviewing Joanna Varner with the University of Utah. Joanna is one of this year's Graduate Student Policy Award winners. Could you talk about your PhD research on pica behavioral responses to climate change and how it benefits society?
So I'm really interested in how animals are responding to climate change, and I've chosen to focus on American pikas, which are really adorable little small mammals. They're closely related to rabbits, but they actually look a little like guinea pigs. They're typically found in very high elevation places in the mountains, but we find them near sea level in a few places in the Pacific Northwest, particularly in the Columbia River Gorge in northern Oregon. And what I'm finding, I'm looking at different habitat and behavioral factors that are allowing pikas to persist in this unusual climate, which could provide us with clues as to how the species is going to adapt in response to climate change in its more typical habitat. I think this is really important for a couple of reasons. First is that pikas can have really profound impacts on alpine ecosystems. They're considered ecosystem engineers because they move nutrients into and out of rock slides that are otherwise deplete of nutrients. They also, I think, are a really excellent platform for engaging people, and particularly kids, in conversations about local impacts of climate change. So taking children to go see the pikas and think about how climate change may affect the pikas, they're really much more engaged with the issue of climate change and in thinking about potential solutions and actions that they can take to help save the pikas and by extension, help us mitigate the impacts on ourselves.
Could you expand on the ecological implications of pika population loss and any detrimental consequences this would have on other plant or animal species?
Pikas are really important to alpine ecosystems for a couple of reasons. First is that they serve as an important prey base for predators such as weasels and hawks, and occasionally things like coyotes. A second thing is that pikas are considered ecosystem engineers, so they move nutrients in and out of rock slides, and particularly by bringing plant matter into the rocks. So they can have profound effects on the distribution of different plant species, and in their selective grazing and caching and foraging behaviors, they can also really impact the alpine plant community.
You've also researched hantavirus. Could you elaborate on your ecological research into this issue and what areas of policymaking this research could inform?
Hantavirus is a really interesting emerging infectious disease because there's no known cure and there's no vaccine. So if you get hantavirus and end up in a hospital, there's a 35% chance of mortality. So the only way that we can mitigate our risk to hantavirus is by understanding how it's transmitted in the environment and how it's transmitted to humans, so that by understanding the ecology of the species that carry hantavirus. The species, particularly that carries the hantavirus prevalent in the American Southwest, is the deer mouse, Paramyscus maniculatus. And our research was trying to understand how human disturbance, primarily through ATV and off-road vehicle use in southern Utah, was affecting hantavirus prevalence and transmission among deer mouse populations. What we found is that in more intact, diverse ecosystems, there was actually less disease transmission, so a lower prevalence of hantavirus in a more diverse rodent community, whereas in communities that were limited to one to two species, there was a much higher prevalence of hantavirus, and that would translate to a increased risk for the surrounding humans. So this research sort of underscores the value of preserving diverse ecosystems in terms of policy and regulation of ATV vehicles. It also can be used to help us understand and mitigate our exposure to hantavirus in communities in southern Utah.
Could you elaborate on how the National Science Foundation Graduate Fellowship has aided in your career development?
Being a National Science Foundation Graduate Fellow has really given me a lot of flexibility to pursue the research questions that I find interesting and impactful. It's also freed me from a lot of other responsibilities that I would have around the university and has allowed me to do a lot more outreach with kids and PICAs. So being an NSF fellow has allowed me to start two citizen science programs for PICAs in that time that would have been taken by teaching. The first has been in Oregon, monitoring PICA populations in atypical low elevation habitats in the Cascade Range and the Columbia River Gorge. The second has been in Salt Lake City, taking urban middle school kids and taking them up to monitor the PICAs along an elevational gradient in the Uinta Mountains. And this has been really useful because the Uintas, there's very little PICA research that's happening in that mountain range, although it is known to harbor a unique subspecies of PICA that's not found anywhere else. So the kids that are participating in this project are not only conducting authentic science research, getting to interact with a scientist and thinking about climate change in a local context, but they are also contributing really valuable monitoring data as to how this subspecies is responding to climate change. I don't think that I would have had the time or resources to be able to start either of these programs without the NSF support.
During your meetings on Capitol Hill, did you find you were effectively able to convey the importance of federally funded research to the congressional staff with whom you met?
I felt like my meetings on Capitol Hill were a really, really valuable experience for me in terms of practicing how to frame a message to an audience that may not have been particularly receptive to it. And certainly the responses to my message varied, but I feel like by the end I was much more effective at being able to convey a message and being able to frame my message and the importance of NSF funding in a way that would resonate with the values and platforms of my congressional representatives.
Were there particular aspects of what you said or points you made during the meetings that seemed to resonate particularly well with the Utah policymakers?
Yes, there definitely were aspects of the message that I think were well received by Utah. The first was the fact that NSF as a federal agency has very low federal overhead, and thus most of the money that is allotted to NSF in the federal budget actually goes to the states and themselves. And that's definitely something that resonates with my delegation. In addition, I think that my representatives were interested to hear about the hantavirus research, since hantavirus is a major public health concern for their constituents, particularly those living in rural areas.
What advice would you give to other young scientists seeking to engage in public policy?
I think that engaging in public policy is a really excellent exercise for me as a scientist in terms of figuring out exactly why is my research relevant. Many of us are sort of obsessed with our questions and our study systems, and we forget why they matter. So I think sitting down and having a real good think about how your research affects people and why the federal government should continue to fund it was a really useful exercise for me.
And that was Johanna Varner with the University of Utah. Thanks so much for listening, and please join us next time when The Ecologist Goes to Washington.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Catelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.